Joined now by the Aussies, Ian Baker Finch and Luke Elvey. It's been a long day, and I'm thrilled that you guys have stopped by. We'll start with you.
Great to be with you, John. We've got Australian weather here, too, right on the waterside. And what have we got? About 80 degrees and
picture beautiful. Perfect. It's about 27 degrees in Australian Celsius.
27, that's almost 90 degrees.
80.
Spot on.
Isn't it double plus 30?
No, it's actually, it's a long story. It's 9/5 plus 32.
Okay, somebody just drove into the median trying to figure that out. I can absolutely assure you. Ian, you had some time off while NBC had the broadcast for the PGA Tour. What you been up to?
Just playing some golf, John. I live down in Florida, down in North Palm Beach. Play a lot of golf at Medalist. Went out west for a week or so, played some golf out in Indian Wells area, just hanging out, spent some time with the family.
Have you been to the Floridian since it's changed hands?
I have not. Not since it's been completed. Luke has been up there and had a game. A gentleman from Houston bought it from Wayne Huizenga, and I've been told it's a really, really nicely done.
His first year at Pebble Beach, the first year he played, I was his pro. And cool. He still kept coming back after
that's a good thing. It's not about the birdies there, mate, is it? It's about having a good time and showing your guy a good time around the place.
He beat me. He's a scratch. When you go out there and if you tee it up with him, he's a good player.
But you don't play the white tees. You play back with the big boys.
I play the white tees now. I am a firm believer in the Barney Adams tee it forward. I heard you describe Luke Elvey, who's going to join us on the broadcast this weekend, and we're thrilled about that. Described him as the Jim Nance of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
That is as high a praise as you can give a broadcaster.
Well, he is. He's the host. He's the guy that everyone turns to in Australia when it comes to golf. He knows all of the players. He knows their children's birth dates. I mean, he knows the whole deal. He's an athlete himself, played a lot of different sports. But he's not only able to do the play-by-play, you know, the coloring of it and, the knowledge of the game, but he can also host. So he may not be Jim Nance yet because he hasn't had the reps, you know, as Tiger says.
Sure.
You got to put the time in. But he's the guy that we all look to back home. And he and I, you know, work together on the networks in Australia.
Well, we saw you. You were down there for the President's Cup and for the tournaments leading up to the President's Cup. And this was the A-team that week.
That's right, yeah. And Wayne Grady joins us on Network 10. Mm-hmm. We do the Australian Open and the Australian PGA. So it's a pretty good team. You know, a couple of major winners alongside Luke.
Yeah, not bad, Luke. That's good company you're keeping.
Yeah, it was pretty smart to call them up and get them to come into the team, wasn't I? Because having that experience around me and the legend status back in Australia, I mean, they're idolised, and no question. It's like what Ian is here in the United States. There's just such adoration for both Wayne and Ian, and it's a pleasure for me to be able to sit beside them as guys I grew up idolising myself.
I had you on the show a month ago, and I asked you this question. And I'll never forget your answer because it was overwhelming. But I'm going to ask you, what would it have meant or what will it mean in the future for Australia if an Australian wins the Masters?
Oh, wow. He'll go down in history. You know, it'll be a celebration. They'll probably have a public holiday like when Australia won the Cup back in 1983. You know, the big...
The America's Cup.
The America's Cup, the
Australia
race.
Australia too.
We're in American talk, we're 0-76 now. we don't actually say it that way in Australia, but we're 0-76. There's been 76 Masters, and we don't have one. We've had a lot of opportunities. It would mean a lot. That guy is going to write. He can write his own ticket for the rest of his life. First Australian that wins a green jacket.
Yeah, no question. We've discussed this, haven't we, John? But five of our guys have finished runner-up. Seven times at Augusta National. It really is such a it's Everest. It's our sporting Everest, as I mentioned to you before. It really is. It's whoever climbs it. We had Cadel Evans win the Tour de France last year, and it's probably the last major sports event on the planet that an Australian hasn't won, and I'm thinking a Bobby Jones style ticker tape parade perhaps, Finchie.
Probably. We haven't won the Stanley Cup.
No, that's an excellent point. Do you remember what you said when I asked you that question? You said, don't tease me.
Yeah. It really is. I mean, it's heartbreaking.
Last week, I thought there were a lot of surprises. Tiger, obviously. Luke Donald, obviously. Biggest surprise for me last week was Sergio Garcia's comments on Friday and Saturday. What was your reaction to those, Ian?
I was shocked that he would say that publicly. For him to say, you know, I think I'm done. I don't think I can win a major. At his young age, is he 33?
32.
For him to say that when most guys are still working their butts off thinking, okay, Ben Hogan didn't win his first till he was 34. I've still got time. I mean, Phil Mickelson didn't win his first till 33. Right?
You want some more parallels? Sergio has 17 top 10 finishes in the majors.
Mm-hmm.
Going into the 04 Masters, Phil Mickelson had 17 top 10 finishes in the majors.
Really?
I mean, the parallels seem similar. And remember, Phil, he didn't say the same things that Sergio has said, but he was tired of answering the questions.
You know, but Sergio didn't, his response and his attitude and the timing of the response didn't seem to me like it was a take the pressure off kind of comment, leave me alone, boys. It really sounded a truthful comment to me.
You yourself in the game had what David Duvall made the most interesting comment to me. He said, you have to protect your confidence. It's the most important thing in this game is protecting your confidence, treating it like you treat an offspring. It's your confidence, and that's your game. And I thought that was very interesting. Mm. You had a confidence crisis at one point in your career. How do you – I had one for my entire career. So I'm wondering how – you know, if you had an opportunity to sit and talk to Sergio, what would you say to him?
I would tell him to turn it around. I'd say, Sergio, you are far too good. You need to spark up. You need to start believing in yourself some more. You need to start walking with the swagger because you deserve to have one. And no one's ever going to take that away from you, son. You've got so much potential. I've loved the kid since he first came over here with his dad, Victor. And I'd love to be able to give him my putting stroke.
He'd love to have it.
I think he'd win, and I don't mean that in a
no, I know what you're
big-noting way.
He just can't get it done when the pressure's on, and there has to be something internal that does that to him.
John, can I ask here? I'm fascinated with Ian's thoughts that because he has to answer those questions time and time again, it doesn't matter how much you tell your mind to not believe what you're hearing, just to keep believing in yourself, stay strong, whatever. It must just eat away at your subconscious over time. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Oh, totally. But, you know, I don't think it's eaten away at Lee Westwood. And how long's Lee Westwood been answering the question? He's still kept his confidence.
But has six less top tens in the major championships than Sergio does, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But he's contended more, hasn't he?
He's contended
lately.
More recently, hasn't he? Yeah. What's he got, six top threes in the last 3 years?
Yep. Last nine. That's exactly right. Last nine majors.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive. And he keeps getting asked the question. How about Colin Montgomery? How long was he asked the question? Are you ever going to win one? Just incredible.
Unbelievable.
How many times he should have won and didn't. Mm. And then, you know, handed a tough deal a couple of times in playoffs. But, you know, I think he's the one that's really got that weight on his shoulders of the best to never win one.
It's interesting you say that. I'm curious, and I don't want to talk about players personal lives as specifics, but in general, you know, we're all older. I've been married. I'm not married anymore. But I relied very heavily on my family, on, you know, the people around me when I was playing. And I don't get the sense right now from some of the young single guys, Sergio included, that they really have that person that's behind them all the time that gives them the confidence that they need or the support.
I think Sergio would dearly love to have a supportive partner on his arm constantly. He's been in love. Mm. He's looking for love. He needs somebody. But he has a very strong relationship with his mum and dad.
Right.
I think he has good support. I don't think he's floundering for that. But I do think he'd dearly love to be married and have a family. And it may be then that he then finds that spark again. Hey, this is what it's all about. I can still do it. He might be one of those guys that, like Lee Westwood, wins his first major, hopefully Lee does it, in his late 30s, maybe 40. when we all thought as a 20-year-old he was he nearly won at 19, didn't he, at Medina?
Right. I mean, that was 1999. That was amazing. When you think about Augusta National, when I mean, obviously you were just there. What goes through your mind?
It's awesome. It's a picture. It's hallowed grounds. You drive up Magnolia Lane. You don't go in that back gate. You go in the front gate, man. If you're allowed up that drive, you take the drive and you take photos and you look at the little green there with the flag that everyone uses to take their photo all day. You drive up there, park your car, go into the clubhouse. It's a sigh of relief. It's a breath of fresh air. And then you go out on the golf course, and it never ceases to amaze me. When people go there for the first time, it must just about take their breath away when they walk out there to the top of the hill at the first tee and look out and just see how expansive that property is and how it really is even better than we show it on TV, isn't it? I mean, it's hard to believe.
Yeah. I remember saying I cried the first time I came round to Amen Corner when Amen Corner opens up in front of you. I mean, it's golf's version of the Sistine Chapel, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a religious experience. I agree with that.
Yeah, it's a big thing for an Australian to admit that. Didn't
Hey, we need to talk about your alligators, by the way.
Yeah, what were those tweets about today that saying? I mean, you basically called our alligators wimps.
They are compared to crocodiles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Our saltwater crocodiles in Australia, as Ian they're said, hunters. They hunt you. Mm. They chase you down. These alligators, you can walk straight by them, they won't flinch. As long as they've got their spot in the sun by their pond, they don't flinch. In Australia, you don't go anywhere near them. You are their dinner in minutes.
I took photos today of this alligator over at Long Cove on the first hole.
Right.
It was at least 14 foot long. I really took a long time. I got him from the side. I figured out how wide his eyes were at the top. His tail was a good 8 foot long. And he had a big, fat, round belly like he'd just eaten a calf. And he was just sunning himself on the bank. You kind of see him looking at me, and I got within 5 or 6 feet of it. But in Australia, you wouldn't get within 40 yards of a croc.
Really?
And if you go to the water's edge, say you're camping and you're washing up, the croc will see you. And at exactly that time tomorrow, it'll be there again to check that you're there. And on the third day, it'll be right there under the water, and it'll get you. They are
stalking.
Prehistoric. They are hunters. Proven fact. I mean, it's the third day. Campers never go to the water's edge in the same place or the same time.
You don't go there ever.
I knew this would turn into an interesting conversation. I didn't know we were going Discovery Channel National Geographic. do we want to talk about the kangaroos next?
Well, we do have the top 10 most venomous spiders and snakes on the planet, don't we?
Do you really?
Yeah, they say so.
Yeah.
Other times I've heard that it was 9 of the top 10.
Right.
One was in Africa somewhere, but
I'm curious. Are you guys at home here in the Southeast? Because you know, when Great Britain opened up their prisons, they dumped half of the folks in the Southeast and the other half in Australia.
Right.
So we're all kindred spirits somehow.
We are definitely. Oh, for sure.
No wonder we like
right
it
around
much.
Here, right? Wasn't Dufusky Island?
Sure, right there.
Colony?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And Dufusky, I don't know if I've told you this. It's actually the first key. But they rammed it all together, and it's called Dufusky. Those are the key islands, and that's Dufusky.
Having a look at this place right here at Hilton Head, and, of course, where we're from in Australia, do you think that the Poms regret their decision sending their criminals to these parts of the world? Sure, don't have.
You know why we call them Poms? It's Prisoners of His Majesty, P-O-H-M. So we were actually the Poms when we came over from England to Australia as Prisoners of His Majesty on the ships. That's what we were called. But now we call the English the Poms, and whereas Australians, we call them Pommies, like the Pommy cricketers, the Pommy footballers,
and the whinging Poms.
The whinging, whatever. It's a term of endearment, really, because both my grandparents are English, and most Australians do have English heritage. But, it's an interesting history, isn't it? Around the same time this was going on, the ships were... And it was such a good move to get out of England at that time. Either died of a cold or the plague or hunger or something.
You imagine when they got to these parts.
They
must
melted.
Have felt like they'd won the lotto.
They melted. They had to. I mean, imagine if they showed up in July. Just after being in England. Are you playing any competitive golf these days? Are you going to play a little Champions Tour golf?
I'll play a couple here. I've played a couple in Australia. I'm playing next week. Loosely used term, the legends of golf.
Right.
I'll be there playing with Hale Irwin, who is a legend.
Wow.
So that'll be a lot of fun.
You guys could win.
Well, if Hale plays well.
And his last start, John.
If he carries me.
His last start in Australia, he won the Australian Legends by 6 shots. He streeted the field. So he's got a big win under his name recently.
Where was the CBS coverage of that?
It was a very small pond.
No, it doesn't matter. You can only beat the people in the field.
He crushed them.
You can't beat anybody who's not playing.
Right.
There's nobody here that can beat Tiger Woods this week.
Correct.
So you beat them all. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was good fun. It gave me a little bit of confidence to think that, you know, occasionally I could, you know, go play. And I love the gig with CBS. I absolutely love it. It's I'm living the dream. I still get to play a lot of golf. I hang out at the golf tournaments. I know all the players. I'm still a part of the family. And hopefully I bring that to the telecast, so that I know what I'm talking about, as you do here. You know, we've been there. We've competed. And we're still sympathetic to the guys out there doing it, and we realize how hard it is, that grind, day in, day out, staying up, staying confident, staying fit, and performing for a living, you know, with your talent. It's a tough deal, so it's good to still be a part of that.
I've enjoyed letting myself go for the last 6 or 7 years.
You still play, though. And still,
I do. Yeah. I do. I play poorly now, though. I have a bad elbow.
But we all play poorly compared to the guys that play here on
tour.
That's
true.
I really don't think the listeners really truly understand, unless they have played with a tour pro, how good they are, how far they hit it, how precise their short games, how wonderful they putt. I mean, I go and play with I played with Luke Donald on the Saturday before the Masters. We went and played on a very difficult golf course, right a pace in from the backs at Jupiter Hills Club, and he had 2 soft bogeys because I'd already held, and he didn't really need to grind on the par putt, and still shot 7 under 65 in the wind around a course that if I played really well, I can shoot 70. You know, it's amazing how good the players are.
I played with Hank Keeney on Wednesday out at Berkeley Hall, and none of the people in the group had ever seen the golf course. Well, for me, just hit it out there between the bunkers, and it doesn't even matter which way the dogleg goes. But we didn't have any map of the course at all. And so the angles that he takes are so much different than the angles that I even see on the golf. I mean, he's looking at a bunker at 310 to carry it, I'm guessing, by the laser. So I guess we'll go right over that. And I'm like, yeah, well, that information's useful to me because that bunker's not in play for me either because I can't get it to it.
Right, we can't reach it.
So I thought that was interesting. You're wearing your duck for
Jared
a
Lyle.
Fine yeah. human being in Jared Lyle, who we're all pulling for. I'm sure that the Australians have rallied around it, and you've recently spoken with him, right?
Yeah, well, I actually went back to Australia to host the Masters last week. I did it out of the studios back in Australia and was in Melbourne, and that's where Jared is staying, and he was actually out of hospital. He's out of hospital for these next 2 weeks in between his first round of chemotherapy, and the decision is made on whether he goes back and when for his second round of chemotherapy. Firstly, he came out and said the first round of treatment went better than expected. So that's great news. That's first and foremost. Right now, in Australia, he's having a bone marrow test, and this is the critical part of the whole situation for Jared Lyle. If he can find a donor, which there's apparently only about 25% of the world that would suit him, and unfortunately for him, his family doesn't have any matches, which is an issue. So he needs to find a bone marrow transplant. He needs to be a recipient of that. And once he gets that, then that can start helping the healing process. The good news is I got to meet little Lucy, the gorgeous little girl that he and Bryony had just before he went in for his first treatment. He is able to hold her again, spend some time with him. He said that's been the biggest driving force for him, but at the same time, the biggest heartbreak, because he just got handed his baby girl for 12 hours, then had to give it back to his wife, Bryony. She goes back up to their house in the country in Victoria, about 3 hours away from Melbourne, and he goes and gets treatment for a month. You know, and as Ian being a father, you know, I mean,
brutal.
So he's dealing with overcoming that pain as well as the treatment. And the best thing he said was the last line he said to me is, he said, as I was leaving, he said, "Luke, don't worry, mate. It's going to take more than leukemia to kill me." So, you know.
He's hanging in really well. He's doing great. And he knows it's a long road. It's possibly a 2-year track for him. It's not just, we're not going to see him back here at the end of the season playing golf. I mean, it's another year, this year and next year, for him to get back to strength.
You know, the Lance Armstrong book, it's not about the bike. Well, it's not about the golf.
Right,
it's not about the golf clubs for Jared Lyle. This is survival. Mm. That's the most important thing.
I hate to even bring this up, but I'm completely ignorant to Australian healthcare. Is this going to be financially devastating for him? I mean, he's just really gotten his feet on the ground in his professional career. And I know he has a lot of friends out here that may be willing to help if they knew there was an issue. And I hate to ask, but do we know?
We will definitely be doing some golf, fundraising, charity things for him for sure, because pre-existing condition from a young boy, he doesn't have health cover that you'd want. You know, he'll have some sort of cover, but it's not not the full deal. And because he had it as a young boy, you know, he had it in Robert Allenby's.
That was the name I was going to mention. The Challenge Foundation in Australia, the patron is Robert Allenby, and over 20 years he's raised $20 million for this foundation. Jared Lyle's the ambassador of this foundation, so he is getting special treatment within that from that foundation, which is a big help. But people like Robert, Ian, and a lot of the other Australians, you've seen a lot of these guys wearing the Luke the Duck pins for leukemia around here. This awareness will hopefully generate some income as well to be able to support him and his family, because it is going to be a huge expense.
Well, if we don't know now, we definitely need to let the listeners know if there's a website out there.
It's challenge.org.au.
challenge.org.au
for Australia.
AU. And
on the front page of the website, it shows how you can support financially. And
there will be a link on my website. McGinnis on Tap listeners will be able to go there by Monday or Tuesday to click on that and take them directly there.
Thank you very much.
Because they're in their car right now. So I can't have them writing down or jotting anything down. But guys, thanks for stopping by. What are you guys doing for dinner tonight? I'm sure that he's taking you somewhere.
Well, it was very kind to take me out last night. I've got my wife coming into town, as you know.
Right,
yeah,
that's
Abby's
right.
Just arrived from Canada, so I'll go out and catch up with her, and we'll have a dinner, and then I'll hopefully see Finch at the bar for a refreshment or two.
And I might head over and blow the froth off a couple of cold ones over on Robert Allenby's boat. Come on, Aussie.
Mm. I have been there.
Twice.
Twice, if not more. There have been two sightings, and I will most definitely stop in.
He is a wonderful host.
He is. You know, he had a terrible day on the golf course yesterday and was all smiles last evening. I think he enjoys this week as much as any player. And I think that's a tradition. Didn't Norman used to bring his boat up here and throw a party all week long as well? Although he used to win the golf tournament on occasion.
Yeah, a lot of the guys did. From memory, I want to say Curtis Strange used to have a really nice fishing boat as well. He used to bring his boat. And Robert's done it at least the last half a dozen years. Yeah, loves it.
Yeah, Curtis still has his boat. He lives down at the coast in North Carolina now. I had him on the show a couple of weeks ago, and that's all he does. He fishes and he plays golf. It must be nice.
He's doing a great job. I enjoy it. Curtis worked a lot of time with him at ESPN and ABC. And he'll be playing with Ben Crenshaw next week at the
Legends. Right. Mm. That's right. Boy, there's a team for you.
Yeah, it's a blast from the past, isn't it, those two?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that'll be great. Golf Channel have the coverage next week for the Legends? I'm sure they do.
I think Friday and then CBS.
Really?
Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, that's why I'm able to play, because I can go up into the booth after I've played on the weekend.
Perfect.
That'd be great.
Absolutely. Well,
I always like that. I always love it when players come up to the booth and actually give their opinion of how it was. You know, give them a chance to tell the people how difficult it was, where the wind was coming from, you know, how firm the greens were, whatever. I think that's the best way to do it. As you know, when you've actually been out there playing, sometimes you listen to the announcers after you've been out there, and you start yelling at the TV. If you were only there, you would have played in that wind, you know.
Do you get much criticism from viewers?
I don't think I do.
Right.
I still feel comfortable going down to the range and talking to the guys.
Sure.
And I'm so approachable that if anyone does want to say, hey, Finchie, what you said the other week wasn't true, I wish you'd, you know, let's have a chat about it.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm an open book, mate. They can come to me anytime, and I still feel like I'm one of the players. I'm not.
Right.
But I feel like I'm still a part of the fraternity.
And they treat you as such,
yes.
I'm sure, because
yes.
They treat me with, you know, there's guys, plenty of guys on the tour now that may not know that I played, but once we start talking, they realize, and you know, all the caddies are still the same, so they still remember.
Yeah, sure.
But
it's a close-knit family.
Well, let's let Luke get out of here. You go enjoy Friday night. My favorite night of the year on the PGA Tour is the Friday night at Harbortown. For the guys who don't have a job this weekend, they'll be over there enjoying themselves, and it's always a great sight.
Thanks for being here, and really enjoyed being on with you, John. Thanks
for having
me.
Thank you. Absolutely. John.